My guest today is Hyung Nam with the Portland Metro People's Coalition, who's also served on the Budget Advisory Committee for the Portland Police Bureau. Hyung, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you fill us in a little bit on what happened on Thursday's vote on the city council budget?
Yeah, it's a little bit still unclear, and I want to just kind of be careful about not adding to further kind of rumors and confusion, just because I haven't, the city hasn't posted the amendments, so, and I was listening to everything on KABU, and KABU cut off before the crazy confusion happened. But what we do know is that there was unanimous support for many of the demands that were being made by the community led by Unite Oregon and PALF and many other organizations like PMPC. And that is to cut things that were really difficult to cut in the past. That includes not only the SROs that was already done, school resource officers, the entire gun violence reduction team that is the rebranded gang enforcement task force that was impossible to cut last year, PPB's participation in the TriMet thing, which was kind of going away anyway, 8 positions for the Special Emergency Reactions Team, which is Portland's SWAT team, and divert the cannabis tax that the cops were completely taking that they weren't supposed to do. And so all that adds up to about $15.6 million, unanimous agreement on that as far as I can remember. And on top of the cuts that were happening because of the recession, so that adds up to a total of $27.29 million in cuts to PPB. And that also translates into more than $10 million in reinvestments outside of PPB into everything from Portland Street Response to cannabis social equity grants to tribal liaison to OEHR funding, Black Youth Development Fund, participatory budgeting with the houseless community, and contingencies. So even though we are kind of hung up in the air right now because we needed a unanimous vote yesterday because of the kind of emergency nature of how these amendments were introduced, because all of this was really, we thought, settled back in May. And it's because of this historic uprising that it opened the door for the possibility of passing anything with new amendments and unanimous votes. So we had unanimous votes in all of this, but the final vote that was needed to approve the entire budget, as far as I know, because I didn't hear this part of the hearing, did not happen, with Commissioner Udaly saying that this was not enough and that the community has been asking for $50 million in cuts and she could not pass this. So that means that on the second reading next week, where we can't introduce any other new amendments, we have a chance to pass the budget. I believe it doesn't have to be unanimous. It could just be even 3 out of 4 votes. And given that there is unanimous consent on these important items to cut from PPB and to reinvest outside of PPB, I'm confident that we can pass those things. But I think it's going to be really important for people to be tactful in trying to repair some of the misunderstandings and tensions and conflicts that came up at the end of yesterday's hearing, to make sure that we can stay firm not only with the things that were agreed upon, that's really important and clear victory for everybody, and to work together for much bigger long-term work of critically examining more of public safety and rethinking it and completely redesigning and rebuilding public safety and a people's budget in the city.
So we're talking about a total of 27 or 29 million cuts that were agreed upon out of the 50 million that community groups were asking for. And I just want to just do a shout out to an op-ed that appeared in the Oregonian on Friday, and we're actually taping on Friday, by Linda Sen, who's the acting executive director of Sisters of the Road, writing on behalf of Stop the Sweeps PDX, and really speaking to planned escalation of sweeps of houseless encampments in the midst of the pandemic and the PPB's role in that. And talking about the enormous expansion that we're likely to see in houselessness. It's predicted to increase by 40 to 50% by summer. So she is also kicking in to that call to defund the PPP and to shift money to fund housing and other life-affirming resources. So cities, police response to houseless people is also very much a consideration here, and the need to transfer funding in that direction as well. So I just wanted to give a shout out to that.
That's really important. We have to remember that we're in a historic recession, and the housing crisis was already just a devastating pre-existing condition. And with the federal moratoriums on evictions and also the extra unemployment all coming to an end very soon, and this recession is really kind of in the early stages, people are going to be devastated, and there are going to be such huge needs for people at every level, and our local governments are going to be strapped, facing austerity. There's no other bureau that we can take funds from. The police bureau is the biggest bureau of all the bureaus in the city, and I think it's really time to start reorienting our public dollars to really serve social needs that policing just only makes worse.
So the PPP budget represents about 40% of the city's general fund budget.
Close to 40% of the general funds.
I'm always grateful to you, Hyung, for your posts on Facebook, because you're always posting really important reads. And one of those, I think today, was the piece from Jacobin by David Sirota, which is talking to the massively disproportionate expansion of police budgets between 1977 and 2017, right? The fact that we had only a 50% population increase in that period, but even adjusting for inflation, we've seen 173% increase in police budgets across the country.
Oh, yeah. I think in general, the overall trend, how much social spending, especially on things like public assistance, has gone down over the years, and how much our spending on policing and incarceration has gone up. It is just a completely irrational system. If you were a fiscal conservative, you would look at this and just think how crazy and wasteful all of this is. And we externalize these costs. I mean, anytime we use policing to try to address issues that are social economic issues that need to be addressed, it only externalizes the costs. I mean, a cost for jailing to the county, costs for incarceration to the state, on top of just devastating people's lives.
Yeah, and I think that sort of speaks to the relationship to the arc of neoliberalism and defunding and privatization and deregulation. And it's really that same window of time where we've seen these massive cuts to the social safety net and the transfer of funding to basically militarized policing.
Absolutely.
The links, I think, to racism and white supremacy come across really clearly in that as well. So Michelle Alexander talks about, you know, you see that massive backlash to the gains of the civil rights movement and the transfer of funding to basically just mass incarceration of people of color and massive spike in policing communities of color.
And on top of that, too, you know, it's really the political economy. As we know that African-Americans especially basically live under recession conditions during good economic times. Their unemployment rates because of discrimination are always double that for whites and Asians. And during times of recession, when it doubles for recession levels of unemployment for anyone else, it is just devastating. So in this neoliberal period, with outsourcing of jobs, loss of manufacturing jobs, African Americans were always the first to be laid off, you know, last to be hired, first to be laid off, and really kind of become in our capitalist political economy kind of a surplus population that there was no place for. So the carceral system creates a place for them. Again, it's an incredible waste of our public resources to, you know, have incarceration and policing increase so much, but certain people have jobs that way and make money that way. And that is the dysfunctional, or I shouldn't say dysfunctional, it functions for certain people and the ruling class. And that is the system that we have today. I think more and more people recognize how wrong policing is. I think it's also really important to think about you know, what budgets can be and what cities can do, and talk about the idea of a people's budget and this kind of work that's being done all over the country right now. Until we get to the point where we've completely disbanded policing, our police, and rebuilt a very different kind of public safety, it's going to take some time. But until that happens, it's really important that we hold police officers accountable for misconduct, especially with deadly force, use of deadly force, and racism. And one way of doing that is making changes to the police contract. And there's a lot that we and organizations, and especially other unions, can do in weighing in on this and getting the city to really change the way that it negotiates a police contract with the Portland Police Association.
Mm-hmm. And certainly there's calls also for just basically decertifying police unions.
Absolutely, yeah. And there are so many other kind of things. One other item that's outside of the police budget is, you know, not only their retirement, but also liability. This is actually in the budget of the Office of Management and Finance. If you pay attention to city council agenda almost any week, you'll always notice these little items for settlements that happen for some of it's, you know, police vehicle accidents or whatever. But one of the top items is police misconduct with use of force. And so that's paid not from the police budget, but from another bureau budget, the Office of Management Finance. So if we really add up all the hidden costs of legal fees representing police officers to the insurance and so on, it is an enormous amount of money that we waste on policing that does really nothing to solve any kind of social economic problems, and that really traumatize people and cause even more problems for us in the future.
Yeah, and can I just say that one of the most sort of dramatic instances I've seen in the last 24 hours of police causing problems is the video that's making the rounds now of the police throwing a flashbang grenade. I think it happened on the 29th when the street actions were just beginning to unfold. And, you know, the whole narrative was about protesters setting a car on fire and all the rest of it. It turns out it was a police flashbang grenade that rolled under a car and set it on fire. And alongside the fact that another live, undeployed police grenade was just left in the street.
It's just incredible. You know, like I said in my testimony, everything from Assistant Chief Davis insisting on using CS gas during this pandemic that can just vastly exacerbate COVID-19, to this study that I only recently discovered that was done after Ferguson about militarized policing. It's the New Directions in Protest Policing study. And the study concluded that police dress for war and only inflame violence and jeopardize their own safety and that of the public. And I think we see all over the country, including here in Portland. And really, I want to say that this is not just about the cops. It's really about who's supposed to be in control of the cops. And that's the mayor as well.
You know, there's just one other connection that I wanted to make, which is, I think you started out by saying, really, the extent to which all this street action and all the protests are really pushing this agenda forward. And the fact that Opal Environmental Justice was, you know, working also to get the police removed from the fare check. And that also, you know, a lot of these issues also really impact undocumented people, because that TriMet policing is one of the ways in which sort of gauntlets are set up. And that's absolutely terrifying to undocumented people, whether they end up in the system or not. So a lot of this really does impact undocumented communities as well.
Absolutely. Many cities, including Portland, before all of this happened, had already been thinking about making transit completely free. And Opal's done some fantastic work pushing that. And instead of the money, so much money going to policing for fares, we can put that money and basically have free public transit. And granted that it'll cost a bit more than just the cost of fare policing to make public transit free, but in some places, it really kind of balances out. But it's just another example of how fiscally unconservative these normal kinds of policies are it's completely wasteful.
I just want to note, too, that connection to free public transit and how important that is for communities of color that have been displaced from the inner core of Portland all the way out, right? And so now they're bearing that additional cost of transportation on a daily basis. So in terms of making, you know, some start on reparations to communities of color, that's a really important development.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, too, is that, you know, whether it's transportation or policing in general, it's not by accident. Just like what the Students for Nonviolent Coordinating Committee did in the 60s with power mapping, looking at why is this happening and who's behind it, right? When we say that the police protect and serve, they don't protect and serve the public. They protect and serve the ruling class. And that means the whitest and the richest people, and not just people, corporations and businesses. That's whose interest they work for. And in that way, it's efficient and functional for them. It's incredibly wasteful and dysfunctional for everyone else.
Yes, absolutely. Can you also maybe just tell us really quickly what kind of action steps people can take between now and Wednesday, which is when the revote is likely to occur?
I think it's important for the heat on the streets to continue because that's what's opened up these doors. But we also have to go through that door and have these dialogues with very clear demands and give them a chance to step up to this moment and recognize that this is a truly historic moment. And we all need hope so much right now. We have a chance of doing something transformational and going in such a different direction. And I really hope we can do that.
We need that heat in the streets, and we need the dialogue too. So thank you, Hyung Nam. My guest today has been Hyung Nam. Thank you so much for joining me today. He is a member of the Portland True People's Coalition and has served as on the Budget Advisory Committee for the Portland Police Bureau. Thank you so much, Hyung.
This has been Desiree Hallgers for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
What happens when you call the cops?
Say what?
This is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on.
This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. You get your rights violated or you all get shot.
I'm sick of people being victimized by criminal cops. Psychopathic predators terrorizing neighborhood blocks. Equipped with pepper spray, mace, cuffs, tasers, and glocks. They like serial killers acting out subliminal thoughts. Forget what you taught. These cops have got a license to kill. Witness intimidation means that they can use it at will. Code of silence means that the pigs will never let out a squeal. And if they go to court, they know the judge will make them a deal. For real, that's why they stopping me, locking me up and stopping me, confiscating my property, talking in my demography, making the poor commodities, profiting off of poverty, enforcing policies, supporting prison economies. Yeah, no one makes money when the violence stops. Hating brutality is the way to make a criminal crop. Blood in the gutters, how the rich butter they bread at the top. And that's why this is what happens when you call the cops.
Come on. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops. This is what happens when you call the cops.